Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
It's football week. It's football week. It's football week on the podcast. It is football week on the pod. It is football week on the podcast. It's football week on the pod. We have Tony Rielli from ESPN. I know this song is not from them, but it's still Tony Rielli. And then we're going to do football movies on the podcast. Yeah. Yeah. It's the big game this week, folks. And that, you know what that means. It's time to rank our top five favorite football movies. We started with 10, but then we got it down to 5. And now you got 5 football movies to rank from. It's football week on the pod. And guess what? Tony Rielli's here, and he's from a little show you like to call Around the Horn. And he used to be on Pardon the Interruption. Pardon my interruption, but he's on a better show now where he gives points to people. And he's a really good guy. So it's football week. It's football week. It's football week on the podcast.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 21. It's football week. Happy football week. We have Tony Rielli from ESPN Around the Horn, who's going to be breaking down top/best football movies of all time. And this is our most voted on poll yet. Over 4,000 votes. The results are pretty crazy, so that's going to be later on in the show. Also, this show, we're going to reveal the nominations for the Goscars, our first annual Lights, Camera, Podcast Movie Awards, 37 categories, and you, the listeners and followers, decide. We help nominate. You guys had some input and some suggestions. We put the nominations together. We included a lot of actors, actresses, directors, movies, but you all decide. So the voting is actually live right now. You can find the voting on our Twitter, and we're going to put it on our Reddit and pump it out everywhere. Oh, and we're also going to review Mom and Dad with Nick Cage. But let's get into some movie news. First up, Ant-Man and the Wasp, a new trailer released today, which is Tuesday. We're recording on Tuesday, was released. The second Ant-Man movie, Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly. Michael Douglas is back. Michelle Pfeiffer is in this movie.
Nah.
Nice. She is playing, Hank Pym's wife, who...
What was the movie she popped up in again a couple months ago? We really liked her performance in that.
Orient Express.
Yes, that's right. And we said we wish she was right, in... Yeah. More movies, and she's in this one, so good to see her back.
She was also in Mother.
I did not Mother see that one.
Mother.
Mother makes the nominations for the Goscars, but where does it make it? We'll see. You're going to find out soon. What do you think about Ant-Man and the Wasp as a trailer?
I'm buttering, dude. That looked kick-ass, especially the end when he blew up the size of the Pez dispenser, the Hello Kitty Pez dispenser. It looks cool. I love the concept of... not just having an Ant-Man 2, but bringing in another character to play off of him, especially Paul Rudd, because he's such a good comedic actor. So I'm really stoked about this one. The special effects look great. It really seems like they're exploring more about shrinking and making stuff bigger this one, and I really like that visual effect when they do that. So I'm super stoked.
Yeah, I agree. I'm buttering too. I did really like the scene where he packed up the entire building into like the suitcase and just rolled it out. I thought that was kind of interesting. I think Ant-Man is one of the more lighthearted of all the Marvel movies. It's really just purely funny, and I enjoy that a lot.
So my one thing with the trailer is, not as much the trailer, but the movie as a whole, there was a lot of Edgar Wright in the original Ant-Man. Even though he didn't finish the movie, you could tell a lot of the Edgar Wright stuff stayed in it. And I'm just hoping that we don't miss the Edgar Wright in this movie and they're able to replicate it, which I don't think they are, because Edgar Wright is hard to replicate. He's got a very specific type of movie he makes, and they're great. So I hope they're able to still make Ant-Man and the Wasp enjoyable, even without the Edgar Wrightness that was in the first one. So we'll see. There really wasn't much in the trailer, I think, because Ant-Man and the Wasp comes out after Avengers Infinity War. And so I'm not sure how much they can really promote it until after that. And Ant-Man really isn't in any of the promos for Avengers Infinity War. So I don't know where really all of that falls in place. So we have to just kind of wait and see. But yes, I mean, I am too buttering to Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm a Paul Rudd guy. Come on. Love Paul Rudd. He's the man, by the way. I got to meet Paul Rudd at GMA, and I talked about Tim and Eric with him because he's in a Tim and Eric video called Celery Man, and that was one of the crowning achievements of my life, was talking Tim and Eric with Paul Rudd. So
I
very
love
cool.
Celery Man.
Yeah, Celery Man's so great. Kick up the 3D. Yeah, it's a great Tim and Eric skit. All right, next up. Emily Blunt is joining another Disney movie. She's going to be Mary Poppins in December, but she is now joining what is, I guess, the Disney Rides cinematic universe, because she's going to be in Jungle Cruise with The Rock, based on the Jungle Cruise ride at Disney. They obviously have, of course, Pirates of the Caribbean. A lot of the rides there already are into movies. So I don't know if this is the start of a new cinematic universe, if they're going to tie it in at all to Pirates or anything. But Emily Blunt, are we buttering to the idea of this Jungle Cruise movie? I like that there's another established actress in this movie to go along with The Rock, because Emily Blunt's a fantastic actress. So, you know, that might move the movie up a little bit in my rankings of what I want to see.
I don't know, man. I don't know about this one. I don't know how much more I can take from these Disney franchises, these rides being turned into movies. I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, though, because The Rock, I will see anything he's in. I will go see It's a Small World movie if The Rock's in it. Like, I don't give a fuck. I will watch The Rock in pretty much anything. But I do want to see, I'd rather see Rampage than the Jungle Cruise movie. And I feel like after doing Jumanji and then Rampage and then the Jungle Cruise, it's just a lot of movies like with similar motifs. You might get sick of it, you know?
I'm pissed off that you said the It's a Small World thing, because one of the many movie executives that listen to our podcast are now going to make that movie starring Kevin Hart as the main lead. I'm with you, Trill, in that I'll watch anything The Rock's in. So I guess Eka has that going for it. Other than that, I don't give a fuck. You guys know I'm not about the Disney original brand, so I never went on that ride, so I don't have any reference point.
Well, you
for
haven't
it,
been
so
to Disney, right?
Never, man. I've never had any interest.
Oh, come on. Get the fuck out of here.
Me and my brothers.
You want to go to Disney?
I never. No. You can ask
Why
me and my brothers,
go
my
to
parents.
Disney?
My parents never pushed Disney on us. I never even watched like the Disney Channel growing up. I watched like Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network. So it was just like never an interest for us at all. We went to like other vacations to like theme park wise. We went to Six Flags. And like we went to,
I bet you're Busch Garden people, weren't you?
Fuck no, dude. Are you kidding
me? You seem like a big Busch Garden type of guy.
You seem like huge ass white trash.
And here's a California joke for Trill. He went to Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh, I would never go to Knott's Berry.
I will say, I know Ken Jackson to go to Disney when we get invited to go look at the new Star Wars park in 2 years, though, because we are going to get invited by Disney to tour it. So,
I mean, I'm not saying I'm opposed to going, I'm just saying I never had any interest.
I should probably stop doing the Mickey Mouse voice.
Ken, Jack, you haven't been, so no opinion. But Trill, what's your favorite Disney ride? Would you turn it into a movie? What's your pick?
Oh, it's been so long since I've been. Space Mountain was where it was at. They actually had another one when I went. It was like 96. It was called Alien Encounter. Have you done that one? It was Disney World. They ripped that one out. It might be something else now. That one was freaky. It wasn't as much of a ride as it was one of those things where you just sit and shit happens around you. And I also like the Tower of Terror too, back at Hollywood Studios, or as they called it back in the day, MGM. I'm surprised at how many rides are still there though that are around.
The Alien ride was actually, it was not based off the movie Alien because they didn't have the rights, but Disney does have the rights now, ironically enough. The ride was turned into a Lilo and Stitch ride, and Stitch like farts or burps and they spray some sort of mist at you that you smell while you're on the ride. So there's another Disney movie, Disney ride or theme park movie. That was Tomorrowland by Brad Bird with George Clooney. That was a major bomb. He stopped doing Star Wars, The Force Awakens to go make Tomorrowland. Did Brad Bird. So. All right, let's move on to Crank.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, dude. I thought we would never talk about this on the podcast. I thought this was a movie podcast. All right, what do you want to talk about?
So the creators of Crank with Jason Statham, they want a Crank cinematic universe. And there's not much for me to say on this, but I know that I'm setting Ken Jack up.
The one thing I will say is that it's the same director as Mom and Dad, which we'll get into later. I kind of dig his cinematic shooting style, so I'm all in on the Crank cinematic universe. I kind of want them to cross over that and Hardcore Henry, because you know how he has to restart and charge his heart all the time throughout the movie. so you can cross over both of them and then have a mashup and have a good old fashioned hardcore crank off.
I mean, I like the crank movies though. They're shitty, but
they know what they are.
Like Taco Bell. Yeah. You know,
Crank is like Taco Bell. That's a good analogy. I like
they're
that.
Basically, they're right. Like part of the Transporters universe, more or less. I always just like associate them all as one big movie.
This is how we'll end on this one. If you're going to make a board game cinematic universe or Hasbro cinematic universe, you can make a Crank cinematic universe. I'm fine with it. So go for it. Next up, Tom Hanks in the least surprising movie news I've ever seen, maybe, got cast to play Mr. Rogers in the Mr. Rogers biopic that'll be coming out soon, I believe, by TriStar Pictures. So we kind of crapped all over the Post recently, and Tom Hanks is a big part of the Post, big part of the newspaper cinematic universe. I don't mind Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers. He played Walt Disney in a movie that was fairly enjoyable in Saving Mr. Banks. I'm okay with Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers. I think this is going to break his Oscar drought, though. I would almost guarantee he gets nominated for this role. I bet he just crushes it in this role. So I'm okay. I'm buttering. I'm okay with Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I'm buttering it too. I think that that's more or less a role. I don't think it could go to anyone else. Like, who else could possibly play Mr. Rogers? That's a big name. Tom Bergeron? No, sir. I don't think there's anybody I could think of that even remotely looks like him. So I'm not. I don't know what type of movie is it possibly going to be though, because you can't really do a biopic about Mr. Rogers. I mean, it's just, are they just going to detail the show, or like just the creation of it, or his rise and fall?
Go in his life. Like he was in the military, I believe. I think the story about him being like a sniper and having tattoos is not true, or part of it is. But I do know, I mean, he's got a really interesting background, and he, you know, made a lot of pitches about public television and its importance and kindness and all that. So I think it's going to be more of a positive biopic in that sense.
Where is the Bob Ross movie? That's the movie I want to see.
What about public television cinematic universe?
Ooh.
There's already a Julia Childs movie.
That's true. All right. You're cooking with gas now. I like that idea.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised there's no Bob Ross type movie or something with Bob Ross. Because Bob Ross is, I mean, he was the Deadpool trailer. Deadpool was playing Bob Ross in the most recent Deadpool trailer. So, you know, that's a good point. What about you, Tro? Buttering the Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers?
I love Mr. Rogers. I love Tom Hanks. I don't know if I need a Mr. Rogers movie. The guy, by all accounts, was a great person. Probably has a wonderful life story. I would just need to know how interesting that's going to be when you get to a biopic. So I will butter a little bit. I'll put a little sprinkling of butter on it. But I'm not like super excited about this. And Tom Hanks also not that great at playing real life characters. And when he plays real life characters like Sully, didn't really like Sully all that much. Captain Phillips was okay. Some other people I'm sure you can name off. So I wish you'd start, you know, maybe not doing that anymore.
Getting back into the Castaways and Forrest Gumps of the world?
Yeah, just do an original movie. You know, now you've been doing all these like real people. You know, let's do something else, Tom. Come on, hit me up. I'll direct you.
All right, last bit of movie news. We talked about this movie a little while ago, a few weeks ago, and oh man, who could have saw this coming? We didn't predict this. Gambit. Production has been put on hold.
Fucking good.
It's back. it's back in flux. And it's just, I almost think Gambit is more fake than Dundee at this point, because every time you think Gambit's back on, it's off. And it's off in the most predictable fashion possible. You know, Gore Verbinski left the movie. Now there's issues. They don't know when it's going to come back on. It was delayed a year. And now Gambit completely off the table for now. Production is on hold. It was supposed to start shooting in New Orleans in March. Nope. I mean, boy, it's almost like we just talked about this a few weeks ago, how we didn't think this would actually happen.
They're doing Channing Tatum a huge favor on this guy right here. He's about to walk into a bear trap, and this is a blessing in disguise. So just roll with it, Channing. You don't need to be Gambit. You're too thick. You're too swole thick to be Gambit anyway. Gambit needs to be like less jacked. You know, you're too attractive for Gambit. He needs to look like Ben Mendelsohn. Ben Mendelsohn could be Gambit. How about that? We don't need it.
Yeah, why not? Movie.
No, fuck Gambit. Lame ass character. I just don't get how this is so hard to make. Just fucking do it. Just make a movie.
It's
Just do it.
It's like James Cameron learning how to film underwater, except it's how to film this like bullshit ass Baton Rouge accent, trash villain that throws fucking playing cards. It's almost like with Gambit, like, you know that commercial where it's like the old man with the fishing rod and he's like the dollar bill and he's like, oh, you almost got it. It's like that, except they're just dangling a big fucking turd for you to eat. And they're like, oh, you almost got it. Like, yeah, no one wants your shitty movie. Like, nobody likes Gambit. Like, five people on Earth like Gambit. He's a trash mutant. His trash powers. He looks stupid. His accent's dumb. Mutants. There's so many other mutants that deserve solo movies ahead of him. So it's like Cho was saying, they're doing fucking Channing Tatum a huge disservice by not making this movie. So whatever. Good. Fuck Gambit.
That's been movie news. One little more piece of news is that Black Panther premiered on Monday night, and it premiered to rave reviews, saying it's unlike any other Marvel movie. Michael B. Jordan's the best Marvel villain of all time. So don't have much to say on that yet. We haven't seen it, but we're going to review it on a big podcast and also talk about comic book villains at episode two, and hopefully with a guest. I got to lock that in, but we'll review Black Panther very soon. We are very excited. Let's move on. Movie of the week. Spoiler alert, because we really can't talk about this movie without spoilers. Mom and Dad, featuring Nick Cage, kind of came out of nowhere. I believe it was released in theaters somewhere. It wasn't released anywhere near here, I think. I couldn't find anything in New York.
So I looked it up. It was only released in like 300 theaters all in the Chicago area. That's it.
Interesting. Okay. So you can also watch it on YouTube or Google Play for $7. So I suggest if you don't want anything spoiled, just go pay the money and watch it. It's worth the watch.
If you don't want anything spoiled, skip ahead to 29 minutes and 10 seconds. This is your last warning.
So this movie, quick summary, is about parents. There's some sort of like radio wave or television wave, and I assume it's an attack or something. They don't really directly address it. That causes parents to go crazy and want to kill only their kids. So not like all kids, just their children. And it's insanity. It's an insane movie. That's the premise of it. I liked it significantly more than I thought I would. When I saw the trailer, I was like, that's top 10 worst movie of the year. No doubt. I gave it a 68 out of 100, just below Happy Death Day. I'm sure it's going to piss Ken Jack off. I didn't quite like it as much as Happy Death Day, but it's right around there. I enjoyed it. It's ridiculous. It's way out there. It's not an amazing movie in terms of like cinema. But I had a good time with it, even though it was one of the most absurd movies I've ever seen. 68 out of 100. What about you, Trill?
I liked it. 70 out of 100. Even beyond the trailer, the first 5 to 10 minutes of the movie, you didn't know what the fuck was going on. You felt like it could be a little rough. And then you start realizing it's felt very self-aware. And then it becomes very dark and very funny. But not like super funny, just absurdist. It's a really weird movie, but it's not horrible. It's just very weird, and one of the better Nick Cage performances in the last 2 years, at least.
Yeah, this is what we were saying before, and it's that Nick Cage, he does accept basically every single role you throw at him, no matter what the role is. But you can't say he mails any performance in, because he goes 100% no matter what the role is. And this is a deranged role where you like he's playing a parent that wants to murder his children, and he gives it his all. Like, he really goes in. Specifically, I know a scene that stood out for me and Trill was the one where they're in the basement and he has a monologue essentially detailing a midlife crisis. I thought he kind of fucking nailed it.
Oh, dude, he killed it. And there's also like clips of him having sex with a chick in his Trans Am, like spliced into random points at the movie too, that just hit home on the fact that he's living his midlife crisis. Perfect, like, acting. Jeff, can we play a clip right here? Because people need to hear this shit. Him doing the dildo monologue in the basement.
Yes.
The world you kids are living in. The things you've seen on the internet. Mouth to dildo, dildo to ass, ass to ass. Hi, Brent. Anal beads. Things I only saw in magazines.
Just give him the Oscar already.
Would that be his clip if he was nominated for Best Actor at the Oscars? Like, they have all these very serious, like, over-the-top clips, and then they just play that clip with Nick Cage, and then the audience is in complete shock.
Oh, they love it. They love it. You know, it's all these world, like, Daniel Day-Lewis comes back out of nowhere this year, and Nick Cage beats him out with this monologue in the basement. Just insane. It's almost, it's not as like insane as Wicker Man, but it's up there.
Yeah, he's an Academy Award winner. No,
Raising Arizona. Yeah, it was a while ago, though.
five lifetimes in Nick Cage time.
And the thing is, he went from that winning an Oscar to this movie where it's like he slapsticked, slipped on a fucking toy truck and knocked himself out, like straight KO'd himself on the floor at one point.
Like it was something out of Home Alone. This was like a really messed up Home Alone. That's really what it was. It was just a terrifying Home Alone, really. And again, one last spoiler alert. We'll tell you what happens. Basically, the family is kind of in disarray. Nick Cage's wife, his kid, his boy, and his daughter, who's a teenager, who he doesn't want seeing, this older boy. The kids go to school. Everyone else goes off to work, and they do their own thing. And all these parents become infected with this thing in their brain where they want to kill their kids. Nick Cage's kids come home. They have to fend off their parents. And then Nick Cage's his parents come, so the kids' grandparents, and they start attacking them. And the whole fight just continues back and forth. And there's a lot of death in this movie, too. You don't see a lot of the death. Like, they do hide a lot of it. I think this movie could have been a lot more brutal than it really was. But in the end, there's really no happy ending because Nick Cage and his wife, they're tied up in the basement. And they really end the movie with him trying to say, we love you, but sometimes we just want to kill you. Mm-hmm. So it's a really messed up movie. And it doesn't really end in a way where you're like, oh, okay, that's a nice way to end. It's got a very ambiguous ending. Selma Blair plays his wife, by the way. I had a blank on the name. And Selma Blair and Nick Cage's character, they still want to kill the kids at the end of the movie, even when they're tied up. And, you know, I guess that's why some people don't like it. It's got a pretty low audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, despite the fact it's certified fresh by the critics. I think people don't like the ambiguous ending, and it's ridiculous, but it really goes for it here. And that's why I think I respect it more than anything. It straight up just goes for it. It doesn't try to be something it's not, and it knows what it is, and like Joe said, it's very self-aware.
The monologue that Nick Cage gives also when he's drinking a beer and talking to his son in a flashback, talking about, he's like the car's a real pussy magnet, and the kid's just like, Dad,
I had that bad boy cherried out from the ground up. Now, you talk about a pussy magnet.
Dad.
Chip magnet.
Huh? I'm sorry I messed up, Dad.
Come on, hey. Like father, like son, right? But if you ever touch that car again, I'll fucking kill you.
So, I mean, he's nuts. And there's another one where he's banging on the door trying to get in the basement because the kids are hiding from them in the basement. And he says,
your motherfucking mother should open the door. And motherfuckers, you're going to open this motherfucking door.
He also sings the Hokey Pokey. And this is before he goes crazy while destroying a pool table. I'll play that here.
Oh, yeah! You put your right foot in. You take your right foot out. You do the Hokey Pokey and you fucking work it all out.
So, yeah, it's as wild Nick Cage as it gets. And there's a few things in there that make you roll your eyes. Like, there's one with the teacher who takes some kid's cell phone and listens to her music, and it's really raunchy, and he's like, you kids need to go to church. And there's just some weird lines like that in the beginning that kind of, at first I'm like, oh man, this is such a B movie, but it kind of redeems itself because it really picks up the pace and hits a stride that you just don't expect. And I think, Trill, you mentioned it to us earlier, is that it's a short movie too.
It's like 82 minutes or something like that. It goes by really quickly. It's fun.
Probably a little bit of an excessive use of flashbacks in the movie, but they do manage to set up a lot of context, which you wouldn't be able to get in a movie this short usually. So I think he does do a pretty good job of doing that in this.
Yeah, there's good humanizing moments. There's a humanizing scene between Selma Blair's character and Nick Cage's where they're in the basement after he destroys the pool table before they go crazy. And you kind of understand the characters a bit, which I think is why the movie works, is that you can understand things a little bit, like their anger and their rage, which, again, while there's moments where you're like, oh my God, Nick Cage, calm down. It works, and that's why it works, because there's a humanizing angle to it where you understand why he's crazy. Maybe unlike something, you know, like The Wicker Man, you know, when he's screaming and you're just like, what the fuck is going on right now? So, yeah, that's really where it works. I will have one question, though, for both of you. The kid, his son has got to be, what, like 8 to 10 years old, right? Why was he not in school?
I don't know.
First thing I thought.
Toy trucks and stuff like that. He's like older than the toy truck age too, I felt. Like he's like in video games now.
Or he's at home with a nanny, who the nanny does kill her daughter, who's also there. It's a very grim movie. I mean, it's very negative. You know, there's nothing really positive at all about this movie that you're going to take out of it.
Was it like a commentary on anything? Like, is there like a deeper meaning to this movie? Or did they just decide to make a movie where, what if parents killed their kids? That's pretty fucking dark, dude.
I don't know. Like, maybe it was a commentary on, like, parenting and all that. But if so, it's very dark. Because, I mean, there's nothing positive at the end of this movie.
No. They're like, we love you, but we still want to kill you.
You know what scene I thought was really cool, too, was when they're in the high school and like it's almost a 28 days later, like zombie breach when all the parents just start attacking all the kids on the football field.
Yeah, like when the parents are first reacting, they jump on the field, they run after them. It's pretty wild. And it's actually a pretty well shot scene, too, as the kids are running away. The other weird thing I did like, and this was my favorite part of the movie in terms of like small detail that I thought was ridiculous. The housekeeper was watching live TV in the beginning of the movie on a DVD player, like a portable DVD player. And it was, it was definitely live TV. And I was like, that's very strange, not having any awareness of attention to detail on that one. But I mean, it didn't take me out of the movie. I didn't think it was funny, though. So my question about the end of the movie, because again, there's not much to unpack here. It's very simple. It's a very simple movie. And actually, a lot of the shots are cool, too. I will say that. It's not a B movie in terms of how it looks, because it's a lot of really interesting camera angles, and the way things were shot are pretty neat. A lot of jump cuts, but like jump cuts in a way that play up with the sound editing and the sound mixing that make it work. And I actually didn't realize that it was the same guy who did Crank, Brian Taylor, who also did Ghost Rider, the second Ghost Rider movie too. Also Jonah Hex, a couple other ones. And it's got the same similar style as the Crank movies in terms of the way the camera shakes. And I'm not always a fan of that, but I thought it worked well in this movie, the way it was shot at least.
Dude, I love that. I love the way the camera shots worked. I also, one of my favorite scenes involving that sort of camera work was the three-way chase scene between Nick Cage, his son, and Nick Cage's dad, who was played by the android from Alien, who was like an ex-Marine trying to stab him while Nick Cage is trying to stab his own kid. That three-way chase was so damn funny. I loved every bit of it.
And then it ends with Nick Cage back in the car to the driveway, and his father is on the roof of the car and slides off the front, and his head explodes all over the front of the car, basically. That was probably the most gruesome part of the movie. They didn't hold anything back on that. So last thing I got to ask about this movie. Thoughts on the cause of why the parents go crazy? Because they don't really go into it. There's like some fake news programs about it, though they do have Dr. Oz at one point. Shout out to Dr. Oz, trying to get that Oscar's Best Supporting Actor nomination. He's in it. They do have a few moments, and I rewound it, where you see static, like the TV, aka DVD player. The live TV goes to just a static sound, and when that happens, the housekeeper all of a sudden kind of goes crazy and starts staring at her daughter and then kind of kills her right after that. And you hear the static noise in the high school as well. So what do you think? It had to be some sort of attack, right? Like that was some sort of like terrorist attack through television sets.
Yeah. Something about the noise of the static rewired people's brains to do a really specific thing, which by the way, is super unrealistic, but I'll let it slide here.
Trill was like, you know, I gave it a 70, but I don't know.
No. It was, I mean, yeah. The hospital scene was the fucking most brutal. My God. Ooh. That was awful. The static came on the EKG or whatever it is machine too. It wasn't just like television.
Selma Blair's character's sister had a baby and tries to kill the baby when the baby first comes out because she's now a mother, and then the static happens and she tries to kill her. So yeah, that is pretty brutal.
I happen to remember, as far as how the attack goes, them mentioning something about Russia doing it. I might be totally making that up, but I do recall them saying the word Russia at some point, but I might be misremembering that.
There were some like political, not, I mean, it wasn't like political commentary, but there were like some political pundits and like a fake news station that kind of talked about that. So Mom and Dad with Nick Cage, it's on YouTube. So you don't have to go to the movies. It's pretty cheap. $6-$7. You don't have to pay to go see it in theaters. You know, I know some people complain about having to go out there and pay the high prices. Watch it at home. It's worth a watch. I mean, I'm not sure it's for everybody. It's definitely different. I think there's some people who are definitely going to hate it because it's way out there and a little gory and very ridiculous. But you know what? Again, for January, I like that. That's good. It's fun in January. It could have been worse. I liked it more than I liked The Commuter last week. I had a much better time with this movie.
I'll say it was the best $6 I ever spent on YouTube. It was also the only $6 I ever spent on YouTube, but the point stands.
I gave it a 68. Trill, you gave it a 70. Kenjack, what'd you give it again?
69.
Nice.
A movie's officially buttered by Lights, Camera, Podcast if two or more of us have a movie at 69 or above.
Oh,
so
okay.
It is officially buttered by Lights, Camera, Podcast. People thought that, you know, that number deserved being nice enough to have the official butter rating. So boom. It's the first movie we've officially buttered from 2018. Reminder, we haven't seen Paddington yet. I'm sure we're going to officially butter that. So, we liked Mom and Dad, Nick Cage, Selma Blair. It's a good time. It's on YouTube, Google Play. Go check it out. When we come back, Tony Reale from Around the Horn and ESPN joins us to break down our rankings and your rankings, big time vote, for the top football movies of all time here on Football Week on Lights, Camera, Podcast.
In this Texas high school, football is everything.
Billy Jean, I'll be honest with you. If I don't get a football scholarship, I'll probably just stay right here in Mudflap, Texas and be a mud farmer just like my pappy.
Bobby, if you don't throw a touchdown in this game, I swear I'll leave you for the backup quarterback.
But what happens when the star quarterback gets into a car crash?
Hang on, fellas. HQ Trivia is about to start.
But Bobby, we're in an intersection.
How's it look, Doc?
Well, I'm afraid both of your legs are broken.
And if it wasn't enough that both of his legs were broken...
Bobby, I'm afraid you also have a terminal illness.
And if it wasn't enough that the star quarterback broke both his legs and had a terminal illness... The football team they played for is also coached by Adolf Hitler. In these trying times, only one person on the team can help.
Assistant Coach Oscar, what are we going to do?
This is what we always do. We always go in with our ideals and we change the world. And then we leave. We always leave. But that ball, though, it keeps on bouncing. The ball keeps on bouncing.
Assistant Coach Oscar Beat, starring Tom Hanks as Oscar Beat, Leonardo DiCaprio as quarterback Bobby McDermott, Meryl Streep as his girlfriend and head cheerleader Michaela Carmichael, also starring Brad Pitt, Sandra Bullock, George Clooney, Josh Brolin, Eddie Redmayne, Will Smith, Oprah, and Hilary Swank. Directed by Steven Spielberg. See it, summer 2018.
All right, welcome back, Lights, Camera, Podcast. Football Week on Lights, Camera, Podcast. So far, we've talked about the movie Mom and Dad with Nick Cage. We've talked about some movie news, so nothing about football. So now we're going to talk about football. And we are joined by the one and only from Around the Horn and many other things, Tony Reale. Thanks for coming on to talk best football movies.
Gentlemen, let's make it happen. This is what I do in my time when I'm away from TV. I drink tea out of cups with plates underneath them, and I wear little slippers like this. So please, this is
that's super fancy. That saucer really makes it.
Saucer. I never understood what the saucer was for. Honestly, this is the first time I ever tried this, but I thought I'd do it for the visual gag. And now that I've tried it, I'm never going back. Never.
It makes you feel more confident about your tea selection.
Really? Or I feel as beautiful as the Queen of England. So,
unlike England, we're talking American football. So hopefully I didn't throw you for a loop. We're not talking soccer.
Okay.
We're going to do top five football movies. And we could have done 10, but we kind of realized that it's hard to say you like more than five football movies.
I'm glad you said that, Jeff. Trill, I'm not sure, Jack, how you feel about this. And I said this on Around the Horn today because I did have somebody I consider a movie expert, up to your caliber, although coming at it from a different perspective. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and the Basketball Hall of Fame. You know, these sports writers, when they go and they travel, the first thing they do is they catch a movie at their new site. Bob has seen incredible number of movies, and he's in agreement with me, and maybe you guys are too. If we're going to rank sports movies, it starts and ends with boxing.
That's fair.
I mean, everything else kind of falls in place after you get through four or five boxing movies. And not to mix themes here, but I always have to roll for Scorsese initially. So Raging Bull and Rocky are flawless movies, no matter how you cut it, no matter what you feel about Sylvester Stallone after 1976. But Raging Bull, Rocky, I thought The Fighter was good. And I also like Million Dollar Baby. So I needed to say that as a little preface to what we're doing here, that for me, it's boxing to start, boxing to end. And football really is lacking among all the major sports. I mean, I'd put baseball movies ahead of football. I'd put basketball movies ahead of football. I put hockey.
Hoosiers in there.
Yeah. I put karate movies ahead of football. So that's my little preface here. But please, start us off.
I put golf. I put Caddyshack above actually all. You're bringing a great point here.
I like Tin Cup more than these football movies. Most of these football movies I've ranked. So, Tony, I completely agree with you. Football movies are kind of lacking.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Ken Jack, actually, before you go, let me say, as always, listeners voted. And this was the most votes we've had yet. A couple thousand votes. But we did it differently. Typically, we just have people select eight movies, and it's like a big pool. So whatever movie is on the most ballots wins. We actually did preferential voting like the Oscars does. So whichever movie got the most first place votes gets 8 points per vote, and et cetera, et cetera. So the more first place votes you get, the more points you get. And this was a landslide. So we'll get into the listener picks as we go along. But Ken Jack, what's your number five football movie of all time?
My number five of all time is one that I'm sort of afraid is not going to make it onto the listener's top five because it's a little bit older. And it is Brian Song, 1971. Worried that people aren't going to jive with it as much, but I think it was a really inspiring movie. I'm afraid that a lot of the listeners haven't seen Brian Song because the premier movie on race relations in football is Remember the Titans. And I think that Brian Song kind of gets overlooked in that. And I think it's a really inspiring story of, like, you know, friendship in a time where that sort of thing was sort of looked down upon. It's one of the saddest movies in the sports realm I think I've ever seen. I hope it gets more respect from the listeners. I don't think it's too promising right now.
I'll tell you this. It got more votes than the 2001 remake of Brian Song, the original Brian Song.
There was a remake? There was a remake of Brian Song?
I didn't know there was a remake. Exactly. These are facts. What? I didn't know that. Was that like a wide distribution? Like, or was it straight to video? Characters. Brian Urlacher. Actually, Ken Jack, I got a lame joke. I love Brian Song. The only thing bad I can say about it is the soundtrack only has one cut on it. Brian Song.
All right. I don't want to spoil anything, but I will build here a little bit. Brian Song was a made-for-TV movie, which really is a stunning turn of events that it makes a top five all-time list now for an entire sport that is the biggest sport in this continent, right? And what we do. And Brian Song, a made-for-TV movie. And what it had was, it had two actors at the peak of their powers, but not in their biggest roles. Let's say it like that, because James Caan plays Brian Piccolo, and then Billy Dee Williams, who is the coolest guy on the planet, who you now know from Lando Calrissian, and you know from Colt 45 commercials, and you know everything about him. I mean, he's playing the coolest guy in the room. So what you had was a made-for-TV movie that had star talent. I don't think this happens anymore. I mean, maybe you can correct me, Jeff. The NBC puts out a Sound of Music or some type of musical once a year that's live acting, and you get real stars playing roles. But made for TV does not get big time stars, but it did in the 70s. And that's what Brian Song had going for. So that's my little interjection. I don't want to say too much more. I don't want to spoil anything in this very dramatic podcast we're doing right here.
The closest you're going to get for a made-for-TV movie is what you said. It's the musicals. Because otherwise, it's just like HBO and Netflix. So it's unprecedented nowadays.
There was a very dramatic sequence of music and everything, stirring songs that once again remind you of a made-for-TV and or afternoon special. I just don't think we can put proper context for our younger viewers, Trill, and listeners, what a made-for-TV was in the 70s. But it was actually a big time deal. Roots was made for TV as well, and it was one of the biggest things around in the history of television as far as market share.
They also don't remember very special episodes.
Oh man! Oh, like, good. One of them got pregnant. I mean, this was a tale for all of us. I mean, a cautionary tale, as we know. There's a lot of different strokes. Had some very uncomfortable episodes that were we were supposed to be learning something. And
the bike shop guy.
Okay, so it wasn't just what Willis was talking about. It was more, sorted affair, as we said. Yeah.
All right, so Brian Song's Ken Jack's number five. Tony, what's your number five?
Number five is also going back to a time in the 70s here. This is something I'm not sure everybody has seen either, and maybe they know at best the title. It's a book that became a movie, and I'll reference it like this too. There was an ESPN show called Playmakers about 10 years ago that really dealt with, well, guys doing drugs before they got on the field, which is what, you know, I mean, football has a history of that in it. So we shouldn't deny that, what that was. I'm going to go with North Dallas 40 as my number five movie. This was Nick Nolte from a time in his life when he wasn't just choking on razor blades just to spit out a line, which he does very, very well. Some late-life Nick Nolte, who we all love, I think, is Tropic Thunder, right? I mean, he's scenery, and that scenery is razor blades soaked in 30-year-old toothbrushes. That's how raw his voice is. Here he is. He's smoking. He's drinking. He's certainly popping pills. And he looked the part of a 1970s football player. Now, that's still before my time, but the images you want to conjure up here is back when, shoulder pads were 90% of your uniform. And sometimes the jersey stopped at your belly button, which is a nice – I think we should bring that back. Ezekiel Elliott's brought that back a little bit. But this is really showing – I think it's true to form of the sleazy, dirty side of football, which I think we should embrace on some level. North Dallas 40 is my number five best football movie of all time.
North Dallas 40 did not make top five for listeners, but it was number 11. It was number 11, which I would say our listener base is fairly young. So that is, yeah.
Hey Tony, is Playmakers coming back?
Playmakers is coming back anytime soon. And now that, you know, Vince McMahon is embracing family fare, whatever he said in this press conference, is we in the XFL is going to be all about Americana and apple pie. I don't think we're going to get that coming out of the XFL either. I think Playmakers gone too soon.
I always felt like Playmakers was the dramatic supplement to NFL Blitz. You know, like NFL Blitz was the game and Playmakers is what was happening off the field.
Yeah, it really was. So, I mean, you got guys buying drugs in the parking lot, halftime of a game, pregame. I don't know if that the NFL was happy about that, and they, this all ended up. But I was happy to see it. I was happy. And North Dallas 40 strikes that tone for me. And honestly, it's good Nick Nolte. Reminds you of a time where Nick Nolte, you know, was bringing some you know what I think is underrated in film, and you guys are movie buffs, so you can hear this. Creepy charm. I think charm is a very underrated characteristic for an actor or actress. I think Nick Nolte brought it really, really well in the 70s and into the 80s. That's number five, North Dallas 40 for me.
All right, number five for Tony, North Dallas 40. Number five for me, this one, it really isn't my top five, but I had to put it in here, and I struggled with another movie that we'll talk about later. I have to pay respect to my crappy football team. It's Draft Day with the Cleveland Browns.
I knew you were going to do this.
It's a ridiculous movie on every level possible. It's so over the top. It's so, I want to say unrealistic, but I almost don't want to because that chaos is literally what the Browns are. Yeah. And I don't like it in the same way I like Major League. Like Major League is an important movie to me sports-wise because I'm an Indians fan. And like my dad jokes, that's the last time he saw the Indians win anything important.
You have to allow for that. You have to allow for your heartstrings in this. I mean, if cinema is not going to get us in the heart, get us to a place that we've always dreamed about, and for Cleveland Brown fans, the most exciting day of the season is draft day. Yes, Jeff, please go ahead.
A fictional everything Cleveland Browns universe. It's better than the real one.
It just, you know, it's got Kevin Costner flexing his sports, you know, muscles. It's got Frank Langella fresh out playing Nixon and Frost Nixon. So,
oh, he's so good. You know,
I will say the funniest story about draft day is when I will not name the college, but when I was back in Penn State, we would cover the draft. We would cover pick every single pick in New York City, Radio Student Music Hall. And they were filming draft day while we were there. And the guy who played this character, Bo Callahan, walked the red carpet with all the other NFL players. So they announced on the screen, they'd be like, whoever it was back then, you know, whoever the big star was, Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin III. And then they said, Bo Callahan from Wisconsin. And so whatever, he comes down and this other college radio station went up to interview him, not realizing he was an actor. The guy's like, I'm not actually going to play for the NFL. We're filming a movie here. And we didn't realize what it was at first. And then I watched the movie. I'm like, oh my God, that's Bo Callahan. That's the fake quarterback. So, yeah, that's my draft day connection. Next up, Trill, number five. What do you got?
Number five for me is Rudy. I'm a big Rudy guy. Big Rudy fan. Rudy's kind of polarizing. I don't think Rudy has aged as well as a lot of these other movies have. It's very schmaltzy. It's very happy at the end. I think it probably took some liberties in retelling the real story. But I watched it with my dad in 1993. I was eight or whatever when it first came out. It was the first time I saw my dad maybe think about crying. Like a little bit of tear, like in the corner of his eyes at the end when Rudy's the underdog, he gets the sack and whatnot. So it's always an emotional movie for me. We talk about how movies are more important when you can associate them with emotions. So this is why it's my number five football movie.
Great John Favreau role in there. The star of his features.
Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn's in that one as well. Star power.
We'll get into Rudy as we go, though, because I think there's going to be a lot of talk about Rudy. Rudy was easily the most talked about movie in our mentions on Twitter.
Yeah.
People hate Notre Dame, and I think that's why they hate Rudy. But I also think some people don't like Rudy because, like I said, it didn't age that well. It's very early 90s, so, you know, generational gap.
I think you can't mark points up enough, though, for dad crying, you know?
Yeah.
I think when dad sees what we've done with our life, he cries. And when dad watches Rudy, he cries. And that those are wonderful things. I mean, that's pretty good. You can't mark it high enough.
The listeners, number five, 4.8% of the points for this movie. 4,270 total points. Your 100 first place votes, The Waterboy.
Oh, that's good.
High. Listeners.
Doesn't surprise me. Wait, who said that? Jack, you have that high?
I think Ken Jack said that.
No, that's not. It's not even close to my top five. But you know what? Good for the listeners. Fucking Rudy Rudiger. What a dumb name.
I just want to say, Ken Jack, nowhere in me revealing it's number five did I say Rudy's not in the top five. So I think you're getting a little ahead of yourself by celebrating.
Compared to our other our other picks so far, they're all extremely serious. And then just Waterboy, just like a Happy Madison piece of shit movie.
And number five. Picks, and now and for number five, meanwhile, it's Waterboy. I'll say this. I wrote some stuff down because I knew you guys wanted to go deep into the catalog here. And I knew Waterboy was going to be in the top five. And I've also, we've talked about this through the years on Around the Horn and PTI. And I don't think Cornhusker or Wilmot ever saw Waterboy, nor would I recommend them to see Waterboy. They're not the target audience anymore. But I do have a special place in my heart for Henry Winkler,
Oh, yeah.
I was surprisingly old, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, when I found out Henry Winkler wasn't Italian. He wasn't Fonzarelli. He was Henry Winkler. I was very old in my life. So if he was able to in some way confuse younger Tony into thinking he was a passable Italian and he wasn't playing Paisan in this role either as coach, and he wasn't even that great as coach, but I have a special place. I mean, this is what movies is all about. I think we give out passes in our life. Ray Liotta could literally do Emoji Part 2. And I would be okay with it because of Goodfellas. And while Henry Winkler is not getting the Ray Liotta lifetime pass, he's getting a smaller pass that he could carry around for the rest of his life because of Fonzarelli. It's just he wore leather on a TV show in the 70s that was about the 50s. And for this guy now in the 2000s, whatever, he's getting a pass for me. So I understand where Waterboy is. It's not in my top five. It's my sensibility as far as humor. But as far as movies of that ilk, it is still not as – it's not on par with Sandler's other work. It's not on par with Happy Gilmore for me, and it's not on par for Billy Madison. It's not on par for a couple of others, so it's not there for me.
Yeah, but for some of Sandler's other movies, it makes this one look like Citizen Kane. So.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah,
I do want to add that Henry Winkler, this is the movie that somewhat revitalized his career as well. He had Scream, but he was uncredited as the principal in Scream.
Yeah, but that was a big role in Scream. Watch yourself. Yeah. Don't disrespect.
My bad. You know, it slipped my mind, but that Scream was a huge part, and then Adam Sandler has just taken him along with him for the ride. He's been in like all of his movies ever since. So good for the funds.
I can't go without saying he's, of course, in Arrested Development as Barry Zuckerkorn as well. He's fantastic in that show. We don't talk TV here, though. Okay, Ken Jack, number four.
All right, my number four is a movie that came out when I was 12 years old. It's a remake of a movie made in the 70s. Some would say it's objectively bad, and I would say I don't care. It's The Longest Yard, starring Adam Sandler. It's another Sandler movie on the list. It's the only one for me on this list. I think it was just an extremely funny movie. I think the "I think I made him shit himself" line still holds up even today. And I think they had a lot of good cameos from a lot of celebrities, whether it be entertainers or people, ex-football stars and stuff like that. I think Terry Crews, Cheeseburger Eddie, iconic role for him, and started him into the roles of like White Chicks and all those other movies like that, where he'd be like the dancing funny dude. That's just insane, huge. And I just enjoyed it. I still rewatch it sometimes with my friends and still laugh, which is very untrue for many other Sandler movies.
Adam Schefter, I think, tweets now and then he collects a paycheck for this movie. He gets every once in a while.
I got to get in on that business.
Yeah, Jim Rome, Dan Patrick, they were in this one.
Patrick is a thespian in some ways. I mean, Dan Patrick.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You had a bunch of wrestlers, Kevin Nash, Steve Austin, and of course you had Goldberg as one of the inmates. So, I like
Goldberg's character.
Yeah, I like that. I don't hate it.
Tony, number four, you going Longest Yard as well?
I am not. I'm going for a more recent movie that is a movie I liked and enjoyed watching. I think I saw it on a plane the first time I saw it, which is not, you know, I can see a movie anywhere. I don't need to see it in the theater, unlike you young pups, all right? I'm eagerly awaiting the moment where every movie is streamable instantaneously upon its release from your own home.
Absolutely.
I don't want to exaggerate. This isn't a movie you need to see in the theater. It's Invincible with Mark Wahlberg, okay? Ooh. Invincible is my number four. I don't think it's going to rate in America's top five. It's in my number four for one reason. It's a great story. It's really legitimately a great story, the story of Vince Papale. And this plays into our Super Bowl week. The Philadelphia Eagles here, not exactly true to the script. It wasn't an open tryout. But here's a guy who wasn't playing professional football and worked his way onto a team, which is a remarkable thing, and had some incredible highlights in preseason games, I believe, but was a real special teams player. I think Greg Kinnear did an incredible job in this movie as Dick Vermeil, a living, breathing guy that football fans will know as a head coach. Recently with the Rams, but of course in the early 80s as a very lovable coach with the Philadelphia Eagles, very emotional guy, always has a little bit of tear, Dick Vermeil, in the back of his eye while coaching. He will openly weep on the sidelines during games and after games, talking about his players, talking about everything. And Kinnear somehow got that for me. I think Greg Kinnear is one of our national treasures. This is underutilized. I talked about creepy charm before. Kinnear doesn't have creepy charm. He has just plain charm outside of his body charm. You can feel his heart outside of his body. And people don't know what to do with him because he's got a quirky sense of humor. And he's got, you know, a weepiness to him. But I love Kinnear in that movie. And it's got a couple good, and this is a theme for me, paisans I like, all right? A couple Italian guys I like. Michael Rispoli's in that movie. I like him a lot, and there's another guy by the name of Acevedo, who I'm blanking on his first name. They got a good couple of good, you know, knock-around guys in the background of the movie. Invincible, my number four on the strength of the story of Vince Papale.
Well, related to Philadelphia and the Philadelphia Eagles, I must add that this movie, it came in on 15th on the listener's list. So,
like I said, America was under the delusion it was going to be a top five, although it does check a box for a recent movie, which I think we all have a recency effect here. We either like the really old ones or the really new ones. And I think Draft Day may get over. It's too many points from some because it's so recent. But all right, I'll allow it. 15, I'll allow a hidden gem from my perspective.
Another Philadelphia Eagles movie, though, the garbage-picking, field-goal-kicking Philadelphia phenomenon with Tony Danza. Last week, we did Best Movies of the Year, and somebody tried to rig the poll and voted for the movie Victoria and Abdul over 300 times and did it right in a row, too. This week, the same exact person decided to do the same thing with the garbage-picking, field-goal-kicking Philadelphia phenomenon. He voted for it, he or she. Actually, it is a he because we collected their email last week because they didn't realize we turned on email validation. I'm not going to call them out. I respect the dedication. They voted for this movie like 300 times. We eliminated those votes.
Do we know if it holds water?
Oh, I mean, I've seen the movie. It's an old Disney movie, I believe. But, it's not a top five.
I love Tony Danza.
But just the sheer mention of his name, and again, I think I know everybody who's got a vowel that ends their last name, what they're doing at the current moment. While also acting, and he was in, you guys can give me the exact movies in the last couple of years he's been in, looking sneaky jacked at the age of 70 or so. But he's also in the cheese industry. He's doing Big Cheese. He's Big Dairy. He's making
Tony Danza?
Yeah, I saw him at San Gennaro, Festival of San Gennaro recently, making cheese.
Oh, really?
Damn. Good for you, Tony.
Yeah.
The last movie I remember him in was Don John with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah. Looking very jacked in that movie, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
He's super jacked.
Peter he looks good.
Problems for me. That movie was about somebody who was trying to be Casanova. It was about porn addiction. That's what that movie
yeah.
I don't think we got a good bill there in the trailer. I mean, we walked into something there. Yeah.
Don John, Tony Danza, moving on. My number four, it's not a football movie. It really isn't. And I put some non-football ones in here just because I wanted to argue with people about Die Hard being a Christmas movie. Like, if Die Hard's a Christmas movie, then you know what? I'm going to put Forrest Gump and Silver Linings Playbook in there. But this movie, I'm going to consider a football movie, because when I think of movies with footballs in it, I think of this movie right now, especially first, and that's The Room. The Room has some of the best football scenes. The Room is so iconic now with footballs, and it's cool getting the movie The Disaster Artist, because if you didn't read the book, which I'm not a big reader, you don't know the backstory of Tommy in that he liked throwing the football because he wanted to keep up the illusion he wasn't from, you know, Europe, from Eastern Europe. He wanted, oh, I'm an all-American guy, throw the football around. And the football scenes in The Room are some of the funniest scenes, unintentionally, obviously, I've ever seen in a movie. And when I associate football with movies, I associate it with The Room. And so I had to put The Room on here. And I was going to put it at number five, but draft day is maybe more ridiculous than The Room. So we're going to move on. The Room is my number four. Tommy Wiseau, all-American guy, big football guy.
Are we going to allow for that in The Room? Jack, Trill?
It's tough. You know, It's just podcasts, so
it's not elevated to the realm of around the horn scoring, which is extremely serious. Okay. I established that podcast versus a show with a scoring system about games that keep track of the score, and then there's a mute button, and then okay, fine. All right. I'm glad we've established. Yeah.
Is it like fun to press? Does it have like good tack?
Wait, it's got a little kickback to it, you know. While I was probably showboating a little bit, I tried to do a no-look mute, and I cornered my pinky, and it really hurt. Somewhere on YouTube, we showed video of what was happening off camera while it went down. I asked for The Room because I made a case as well recently that Point Break should be on people's lists, because Utah,
yeah.
Character had football in his background, and it is a very important scene on the beach where they're whipping it around, and that really, you know, that gets him into the crew, Patrick Swayze's crew, and basically sets the movie off on its entire trajectory. So I've argued with some that I would vote for Point Break. I didn't, but I will respect The Room. We can move
on. Okay. That's good. You know, I'm glad I have respect for
it.
I don't think it's really a football movie, Jeff, but I think it's a movie that features footballs very centrally. So, you know, I don't want to have this argument right now, but like I'm saying, this is the diehard, like you're saying too, the diehard Christmas movie debate of the football movie realm.
Here's the big thing I'll say. There's a difference between this and the debate of Die Hard compared to Christmas, in that I don't associate Die Hard with Christmas whatsoever. I do associate, when I see football in movies, I associate The Room with that. And what I'll give you, Jeff, is that in The Disaster Artist, the football throwing scene is maybe one of the funniest scenes in the entire movie. That their spoof of that was hilarious. So I will give you The Room as a football movie.
Hey, have you guys heard of a little movie I like to call Little Giants? Because that's my number four pick.
Right, yes.
There was a time between Married with Children and Modern Family that Ed O'Neill didn't really do that much. And Little Giants was a great movie that he was in, also with Rick Moranis, who went on to retire a few years after it. Perfect early 90s Disney-like kids movie. There are things that stick with me today, like the annexation of Puerto Rico and also the Alka-Seltzer tabs foaming at the mouth scene. Yeah. I love this movie. It's a stupid movie, but it's stupid in a cute, good way. It's a good movie to watch with kids and the whole family. So just bring them to watch Little Giants. Don't make them watch Married with Children, though. You might get the impression that they can watch that because he's in the Little Giants, but they can't.
I will say the annexation of Puerto Rico, the Fumble Rooski play, that has a lot of relevance and reference every
Boise
year.
State.
You're referenced a lot, yeah.
Panthers ran it too.
I think it's a great pick. Didn't make my top five. I think it's a great pick, though. Looking at the other movies that football has turned out, while it's a kids movie and it's a little bit silly, it actually doesn't fall too far down on my list outside of the top five.
And, of course, the great Rick Moranis, as Trill said.
Icebox? Icebox was it. Hell of a nickname.
Off the fridge, but it's great. It's wonderful. Yeah.
All right. Number four for the listeners. 4,535 points. 5.1% of the points. Ken, Jack, you celebrated too early, my man. It's Rudy.
Damn.
The thing is a lot of people, as Trill said, it's a polarizing movie. A lot of people were like, well, Rudy sucks. I better not see Rudy, this and that with Rudy. And it actually reminds me a lot about the conversation that was in our mentions when we did top Christmas movies and people hated on A Christmas Story. And now that was a lot about overexposure. I'm sure I love A Christmas Story, and I think all of us had it on our list, but I kind of liken the same hate towards her. I'm like, oh, that's that's interesting. But Troy, you kind of went into it earlier, so I don't have to totally rehash that. It's corny. It's cheesy, but the listeners have it at number four, and I'm sure it's going to show up later, so we can hold off. All right. So listeners do with the Waterboy, then Rudy at number four. Ken Jack, what's your number three?
Sticking in the early-ish 2000s, I have The Replacements. Really fun movie, a really sort of engaging idea with that I think a lot of people resonated with. I think a lot of people sort of think of the what ifs, not even just with athletes. Like a lot of people I think had mentioned on Twitter, like I think I saw that trending the other day, like what athlete, if you could give them a full long career, who would you give it to? Like Brandon Roy or someone like that. A lot of people think about that with athletes, but they also think about it with themselves. So I think it was an interesting idea. And it was really emotional towards the end, I think, with Hackman's narration, where everyone just sort of signed off and went back to their regular lives. I thought it was sad, but also really cool concept. So I got The Replacements, number three. I don't know what you guys think, but I think it's an awesome movie.
I think it's one of the reasons Joe Flacco gets the hate he does sometimes is because it's so close to Shane Falco, and people are expecting Shane Falco, who's so cool. Yeah. And Joe Flacco might be cool too, but he's not Shane Falco. So I think that was huge on the movie, was kind of a detriment to him.
So can we break down Keanu Reeves? Now, this is the second time we've gotten to Keanu Reeves throwing a football. Do we like the way he looks in a football uniform? Does he pass as a quarterback for you?
He looked great in shorts. I loved it. I think he had a good posture. You know, he had a great drop back. He's a shotgun quarterback. I liked him.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned Gene Hackman in this, and I miss Gene Hackman. I think it will stun you if you look how old Gene Hackman is right now. It's 88. Gene Hackman's 88 years old, and he's retired from acting. But we often have a debate, who's the greatest living actor? And that really means to say, who's the great old person that we know that's an actor? But Gene Hackman, I think, is on that list for me. I mean, I think he might be as good as we've turned out at that age, at least American actor. And kind of miss him. Which he was still.
It's wild that his last movie was Welcome to Mooseport with Ray Romano.
Oh man.
Oof. That was 14 years ago. That's insane. That's crazy.
I didn't realize it was 14 years ago.
Oh, that hurts.
I always think his last movie was close to the Royal Tenenbaums. But yeah,
that was second or third to last. And that was actually 2 years before. That was 2 or 3 years before Welcome to Mooseport.
He's great in that. I think we mentioned, we started today with boxing being where you're going to go for all your best sport movies. But he's, of course, in Hoosiers. And if basketball is going to roll one out onto the court, I would say Hoosiers is on that list. And it's because of Gene Hackman, just the way he carried that movie.
Also on Replacements, another Jon Favreau football role. He needs more it's too late now, but I wish he had more football roles.
Too late now. I think it's definitely too late now after seeing him in Chef.
Oh, Chef, you named a favorite of mine.
How great was Chef? You don't need a movie to take you through every single emotion you've ever had and to make you hate life halfway through just so you can come back and love life by the end of it. You don't need it. Chef could be good on its own. Just, you know, watching a guy go through a little something, a little pimple in his life, but really find his true, you know, spirit. I thought that was wonderful. The food.
Oh, the food.
And it's a Bobby Cannavale film as well. Am I up here for number three?
It's your turn.
Okay. This next one I haven't seen in a while. And if you guys have seen it, I don't think you saw it how I saw it. Okay? If that's a way to really throw a little mystery into this one. A big movie growing up for me, and I grew up in New Jersey, was a movie called The Program. The Program had a very dark and real scene in it at its release in theaters that has been wiped from the world, I think, at this point, because it became very, very scandalous. Program is about, once again, the nitty-gritty side of football and football practices. But there was a scene in this movie where the players go out into a highway in order to prove their you know, their bravery, their guts, their manhood. They lay out in the highway as cars drive by them. And you had to have the nerve to show that you can lay out on a highway at night in the dark and trust that you wouldn't get run over, or maybe trust that, who knows? I mean, and then the very sad part of the story is young men were doing this in 1993, and this happened in New Jersey. I believe someone was fatally struck in New Jersey. So that movie got a bad reputation from that. But oh no, I'm going to put it on this list because it really made an impact on me. Haven't seen it. Not sure if it holds up, but I'm going to put The Program in number 3.
See, yeah. The early 90s was a really weird time because stories like that, there's so many few outlets that people could get their news from. So your mom would watch Hard Copy or Inside Edition right after the news. And these are the type of shows like this would be the headline story and say it's a national phenomenon. That's the reason my parents wouldn't let me watch The Program. I don't know why they thought I would actually do that. And also I was 8. I think this was more like high school football players doing this, but I couldn't watch it, but I watched it eventually. It's a pretty good movie.
So The Program, which actually came in top 20, number 18.
Woo, I am in the teens today, man. I'm not simpatico with our audience here. Okay.
It did beat out Air Bud Golden Receiver, though.
Ooh.
So The Program, Tony, that's your number 3. My number 3 is Rudy. I almost had it above my next one, but I thought about it as a movie more, and I'm like, okay, no, as a movie, it doesn't beat it. But Rudy, for me, I first saw right around the time I was transitioning from liking things like Star Wars and not liking sports at all. And the first thing I got really into was college football. My dad went to Ohio State, big college football fan. And I watched this around that time. So it was right around when Ohio State won in 2003. So it has that kind of meaning to me because, like, I was like, oh, I love college football. This was a great college football movie. And so it means a lot to me in that respect. Also, the music in Rudy is fantastic. The main theme song to Rudy is great.
Do,
at the
do,
end.
Do, 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 do. That's perfect.
I'll probably put it in right now and play it over here. And so the music would stick to me the most. And it's a cool moment. But I do get, especially more so than a movie I mentioned earlier that people hate on, A Christmas Story. I get the hate for Rudy. I think I get more than A Christmas Story. And I agree with Trill. The Notre Dame part does have a lot to do with it. Because, again, I went to Penn State, and a lot of Penn Staters, they like to make fun of Rudy, say he was offside and all this crap. So
I'm from Indiana, and you go to a Purdue game, Purdue versus Notre Dame, even though Purdue likes to think like they're a big time program and they get crapped on by Notre Dame most of the time. You see a lot of shirts that says like Rudy sucks, and on the back of it, it will say something even worse. And I won't go into it on this podcast because families are listening right now, but there's a lot of hate for Rudy there just because there's a lot of hate for Notre Dame. And I got to say, some of it might fall on Notre Dame, but a lot of it is just like the national exposure and the attention they get. It's not the fault of this movie, guys. Just go back and rewatch Rudy and give it another chance. Instead of Notre Dame, pretend it's like TCU, okay? Just pretend it's TCU and see how you feel about the movie.
Do we even need to see the movie? I felt like we just saw it when you sang the song.
In my mind, I was very on pitch. So when we listen to the podcast, I won't be. It'll be great.
How do we think Sean Astin's career is gone? Like you thought it would? Think he could have found a niche somewhere?
I think it's gone pretty well. I think anytime you're in one of those Lord of the Rings movies, it's kind of like being a hero in a college town where like everybody's just going to buy you a beer for life. Like, and you're made in that respect. So I think he's known, he can always go to a Lord of the Ring convention, sign autographs for hours. Like if he gambles all of his money away in Vegas and he needs to make something back, just go to Comic-Con. You just wear the Hobbit stuff. But the Stranger Things thing was like a turn I did not see coming. Yeah. If you were to say like 15 years ago, what would Sean Astin be doing? And you'd have to say, okay, there's this service that you download shows to your computer and then Sean Astin's on that. I'd be like, well, that doesn't sound very successful, but it's the biggest effing thing going. So who knows? It's hard to evaluate. What about
I'll
you,
say
Tom?
This though. I link up to one other movie that has football in it. I have a sweet spot for a movie called 51st Dates.
Oh yeah. The steroid guy.
And
that's a great
he
point.
Is the brother who is the steroid guy. And the football hook to this movie is that it's one of the videos that they have to play to kind of remind his sister, Drew Barrymore, where she is in the world. And the play they show is a Minnesota Vikings play with their H-back tight end, who's got one of the great names, Jim Kleinsaucer. So I just remember him, Sean Astin, who with a lisp in that movie saying Jim Kleinsaucer, which is just great. So there we go. Yeah.
So I actually think the peak of his career was Encino Man, because Encino Man's one of my favorite movies of all time.
What I will say, Jeff, by the way, about Rudy is that Rudy is objectively good. And if you don't think so, you're just wrong. I do think that it sort of hit that almost, you know, with us, how everyone says the Emoji Movie is the worst movie of the year, even though it's clearly not, because it almost became sort of like a meme. Right. It's like a meme to hate Rudy. It's like people, it's just a popular thing to pile on. And it's clearly not a bad movie. So I think it just hit that sort of bad gray area.
Trill, number three. What's your number three here?
My number three is Friday Night Lights. I haven't seen the TV show. I love the movie. One scene in this movie is not even related to football that stands out for me. And it's the coin toss scene, which I love, in the diner or wherever it is. And people are just on looking where Billy Bob and the two other coaches are there. A lot of tension. The only thing that bothered me about this movie is it takes place, I think, in 86 or 89 or something like that. And you can see in the end football scenes, they have Under Armour visors on. They're wearing Under Armour visors for some of these football scenes at the end. So a little points off for a failure to stick to the period piece costume design when other movies are doing it so well now. But great movie. And Billy Bob Thornton, by the way, kind of came back. He had a rough early 90s, and then Friday Night Lights put him on the map again, I think.
And of course, my favorite Bad Santa. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, as a Texas boy, and I'm gonna hold off Friday Night Lights comments. That's, I guess, a little tease. That coin toss stuff, that's real, and that still happens. So
yeah, it's wild.
It doesn't happen often. Does not happen often.
Yeah,
yeah, it's insane. All right, listeners, at number three, 5.6% of the points were awarded to this movie. 4,935 total points. It had 195 first place votes. The third most first place votes. The Replacement.
I like it.
So they agree with Ken Jack. The Replacements.
Yeah. Okay.
It was in my top 10, not in top 5.
Listeners have Waterboy, Rudy, and The Replacements. All right, top two. Ken Jack, what's number two?
My number two, an OG, James Vanderbeek banger, Varsity Blues. Paul Walker, Amy Smart, and our favorite thick boy, Jesse Plemons, was in it. You guys remember this? Paul Walker's little brother in the movie. That just like screams at James Vanderbeek and taunts him into throwing the football at his dad's face.
That, are you serious? So Jesse Plemons is in that movie.
It was humorous. It was romantic. It was like touching when they turn away from the coach. Standout scene, James Vanderbeek being like a human thesaurus for the word penis.
That would be your standout scene.
John Moxon.
Johnny Moxon.
Yep. Yeah, Johnny Moxon. Like, got to have the great quarterback name to be Johnny a great Moxon quarterback. Great movie quarterback.
It's been a while. I'm not sure. Does it still hold up? Have you seen it in the last 3 years or so, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, it's a TNT banger, I think. I saw it like 2 years ago, and I enjoyed it.
Good. All right.
It kind of holds up, but not completely.
Well, first off, also rest in peace, Paul Walker, by the way. But it came in at number six for the listeners. The listeners had it at number six. It missed top five by about 86 points, so not many votes. So Varsity Blues was just behind Waterboy by a hair. All right, Tony, top two. What's your number two?
Top two, aforementioned on a list. For me, it's number two, Friday Night Lights. I could say a lot of positive things about it. Here's why it's number two and not number one for me. It's not as good as the TV show. It's not as good as the book. And the best actor in it is not even his best work. Billy Bob Thornton, I think, was his best in Fargo. I know you guys don't talk about TV here. You have a but I Billy Bob Thornton blew my mind in Fargo when he was in season one. That being said, Friday Night Lights, the overall oeuvre, if you combine the book, the TV show, and the movie, is pretty flawless. I don't know of something that's had a greater 3-for-3 than that, because sometimes you see a book and a movie. Sometimes you see, a TV show and a movie. You don't see all three often, and that's rare air. Friday Night Lights, my number two.
Explosions in the Sky soundtrack for the movie, amazing as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold off still.
Oh, yes. I know what that means. Okay.
My number two, which I guess just gives it away at this point, my number two, it's Remember the Titans. Remember the Titans is my number two. I wanted to be like a hater and not put it in like top three, but then I realized, thinking back on all the speeches, Denzel in the cemetery, beach in the field, is, they're not going to gain another yard, all that stuff. It's an inspiring, it's a fun movie, the We Are the Titans thing. I remember watching that as a kid. That was like the best thing ever, watching that growing up. And Remember the Titans just holds up. I feel like, you talked about Varsity Blues. Does it hold up? I think Remember the Titans really holds up still. Crazy how old that movie is.
When did Remember the Titans come out?
I think it was 2000.
Well, girl guessed right. It's 2000.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah.
Number two reason for me to love it was the Goss God himself, Ryan Gosling. Anything with Ryan Gosling, I'm going to like immediately. But the music in Remember the Titans, and the music is used every college football season. It's used for so many football videos. It's fantastic. And that music, to me, is incredibly iconic. It tied the whole movie together in the emotional scenes. Ain't No Mountain High Enough, great song in that movie, obviously. I mean, a classic. And I think of that movie when I think of that song. Yeah, Remember the Titans, like I said, it holds up in many ways. And like I said, I wanted to not put it in my top three, And the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, that's just stupid. Like, it's easily top two. So Remember the Titans for me. That's my number two. Trill, what's your number two?
Jeff, number two for me is Remember the Titans as well. I just cannot believe this movie's 20 years old. Perfect family movie. Love it. There's a message. It makes you feel good when you watch it. Great performances from everybody. Also, great soundtrack, like you said. Really nothing more to add in my part.
Yeah, the 20-year-old thing is just, that's wild. There are some movies you hear that are older, and you're like, oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense. That one, for some reason, maybe that's a testament to, like I said, it holding up more, because you don't realize how old that movie is.
Well, it's weird now, because you're starting to see video clips from the early 2000s. So someone linked me to, like, a Michael Vick passing touchdown today from 2002. Video looked like it was from 1973.
No HD just totally messes with you, right? If it's not in high def, it totally messes with you. I started doing Around the Horn in PTI. We weren't in HD. Now I feel like I'm a dinosaur, you know, just trying to – when we go back and watch old videos. But you're right, because Denzel always looks the same. So that's one thing it's got going for it. And Gosling always looks like a snack out there. So it's great. Yeah.
Buy the T-shirt. Tony Reale said the catchphrase, so buy the freaking T-shirt.
I know what I'm doing here. All right, good. Are we there? Are we at number one at this point?
We're at number one. I'm not going to say the listeners two and number one. I'm going to say it all together at the end. So we're going to save the listeners number two and their number one. And the votes for that are insane. We'll get to that in a second. Ken Jack, lay it on us. Your number one football movie.
It's getting kind of repetitive over here because my number one is Remember the Titans. I think it's an extraordinary movie. I think it's really absorbing. You really feel you're in part of the roles with them. You really like you're worried about what's going to happen to everybody. It's very memorable. I think when you think of football movies, the first movie you think of is Remember the Titans. So I think that's what makes it one of the best, in my opinion. I think three scenes stand out to me. The not another yard speech during the game. I think the hospital scene with Gary and Julius was amazing. And the training montage, one of the better sports training montages, I think.
I'm glad you brought that up. You're absolutely right. I mean, Rocky IV has got the greatest training montage of all time. Oh, yeah. I think we can all rib on that. But that's what jumped out at me. When I think of it, I think of Gosling dancing, you know, and I think of the training montage.
So, Ken Jack, your list. Brian's Song, The Longest Yard, 2005, Adam Sandler. The Replacements, Varsity Blues, and Remember the Titans. Tony Reale, your number one football movie.
Well, I want to preface this just because my personal number one has already been said. It's already out there. So I just, some of the others I was considering, can I throw that out there? Or you'd like to put that in the back here? I wanted to mention, if we're going to include documentaries in all this, I thought The U was outstanding, an ESPN 30 for 30. What if I told you the biggest star in the world in movies was in this documentary looking like I was wearing a fanny pack around his belly and he had the curly hair. The Rock's in The U. That's reason one you should need to see it. Miami was such a gas. What a fun team in the early 90s. They're trying to borrow. They're trying to steal. They're trying to have that false bravado now with their turnover chain. But what they were in the 90s and early and late 80s, I mean, Michael Irvin used to get a first down in the game, and he would celebrate like he was riding off the field on an Asian elephant. I mean, it's incredible what they used to do in the middle of games. I think The U is a must watch. If we're going to put documentaries in here, The U would make my list. Just looking at this, the others that I had on my greater list that nobody's really mentioned right now, a movie that's not in my top five, but I think is worth a watch, is called Big Fan, Patton Oswalt.
And I
think that's got a different vibe than just about every movie we said. The stirring music that we've liked, watching Dad cry like we've liked to remember in some of our movies. You're not going to get it there per se. It's a little bit of a darker movie, but I think it's a great watch there too. But my number one, as I said before, is Brian's Song. We started with Brian's Song. I'm going to end with Brian's Song here. I think it's worth a watch for anybody. A made-for-TV movie. Again, it's going to look old. Does it hold up? The visuals aren't going to exactly hold up. But when James Caan is running and Billy Dee Williams is running and breathing hard and sweating and singing the fight song from their college, that stuff works. It just really, really works. It's going to look – it's going to look old. It's going to seem like you're watching a movie while sitting on a couch that's wrapped in, you know, how grandma's couches used to be wrapped in that type of plexi, whatever. I mean, you're going to feel like you're watching a movie like that. It's going to have cigarette burns in it. I mean, everything about it's going to be old, but it's going to grab you by the larynx and rip your neck out. I'm sorry, this is a family show. I got a little worked up there. But you're going to look down, and you're going to just see your heart in a pool of blood on the floor, and you're going to smile, and you're going to be like, that got me. I can get me from zero to tears in about three words. You know, I love Brian Piccolo. That's four words. Damn, I missed my landing there. Brian saw my number one.
I'm surprised it's going to look so old because it only came out in 2001.
I think you're talking about the wrong Brian song.
So your top five, North Dallas 40, Invincible, The Program, Friday Night Lights, and Brian Song, the original. Mm-hmm. I will ask you one question, though, before we move on. No, remember the Titans.
Titans for me was six. Jerry Maguire for me was seven. I was moving Titans around with Invincible when you asked me to come on here. Those were the two. So Titans, Invincible, and Jerry Maguire are all pretty close. We have not said three words that are often said on a football telecast that are a movie, Any Given Sunday, yet. I was trying not to scoop anybody in case they were saying it. I had that as number 27 on my list, and I only ranked 14 movies. So that tells you how I feel about that. Everything I told you about people I like and names that end in vowels. I went in with an increased level of expectation here for two reasons. One's Al Pacino, and the other was, Al Pacino, and I heard a rumor that Jamie Foxx was, and P. Diddy, who I think at one point was thought to be a potential for the movie, were training at Fordham University while I was there over the summer. There were some, you know, Oliver Stone was training them. So I went into this movie with two, you know, hooks to the movie, Pacino, and maybe Fordham was somehow, you know, involved in it. And it missed the mark for me completely. You know, I even laugh at the idea that people think the Inches speech is a good speech. The inches we need are everywhere. Jeff, Trill, I'm Al Pacino, and I'm going to talk like this. I mean, just the movie. So number 20, what did I say, 27 for me? I only ranked 14 movies, and Any Given Sunday was 27 for me. And now I'm going to stop talking. Sorry if I insulted your number one.
I agree with you completely. The only thing I liked about Any Given Sunday was the Steamin' Willie Beeman character. The character was cool. But aside from that, the whole movie was just overblown.
You can't tell me that there's a realistic movie. They were trying to play it up like the football scenes were the most realistic things you've ever seen. I mean, I have a conflicted history with Pacino. Again, he's got a lifetime pass for me. We all agree that, you know, they started with Son of a Woman, the hoo-ahs, and just started getting more and more and more. Devil's Advocate. Oh, more, more. Going bigger. I'm going bigger than you. You know, so, I mean, I'm sorry.
Tony, have you seen the Dunkachino clip?
I have seen it from Jeff. Jeff was the source of it for me. So I never saw that movie, but I couldn't believe what I would see. Dunkachino, So he does a dance move in there that made me laugh, and I've actually watched it more often than not. You play that game, you know, look at the last 20 things you searched on your phone. Dunkachino might be on there for me. All right. That's it. I glossed over Jerry Maguire, which hasn't been said yet either. Guilty pleasure. I mean, it has some of the all-time great, you know, moments that you would remember in a movie. Cuba Gooding is really good. He gives you, you know, good Cuba Gooding in it. That movie is kind of a cheat code, you know. It's trying to hit you on a couple Tom Cruise, cocky Tom Cruise level. Okay, check. Cuba Gooding going all out of this world, chewing up scenery. Check. You know, whispery Renee Zellweger. Check. Show Me the Money's great. You Complete Me, you know, works, you know, in a rom-com. And I don't mean that in a backhanded compliment way. It was out of the top five for me. And please, Jeff, take it from here. I'm talking too much.
So you did say, I don't want to offend anyone's number one. Any Given Sunday is not my number one.
Okay.
I don't know if it's Trills, but it actually is not even in the top five for the listeners. It was very close, but it was actually number seven.
Oh, really? Okay, good.
So you're not offending anyone on that. Yeah. I didn't put it in mine. Yeah. This will be my lead into my number one. I didn't put it in mine because – so I don't mind the speech like you, but I also I thought about the movie and I'm like, oh man, I the movie outside the speech is nothing to me at all. So
yeah.
It really had no place. My number one, I already telegraphed it. Look, I went to high school in Texas. I didn't play high school football. All of my friends who I'm still close with, they played high school football. And Friday Night Lights is my number one because it captures Texas high school football so realistically. I mean, it is a true story, well, for the most part. And just the powerhouse schools like Dallas Carter, those powerhouse teams in Texas, right now it's like a team like Allen, Lake Travis, they exist. And it's unbelievable. Texas high school football is something that you don't understand what it is until you live inside of it. And you realize like that part of the year in high school, that dominates life, no matter if you play it or not. The stadium that I had my high school playing was like 15,000 seats. Actually, the high school football stadium, and I'll go off on a small tangent here. The high school football stadium that my high school played in, and they played their last year of my senior year, was Permian's from Odessa Permian, and they moved it down outside of Austin. And actually, my high school's football district was the basis for the show Friday Night Lights because it was a team called the Pflugerville Panthers, and they changed it to Dillon Panthers. Austin's like Rolling Hills, and, you know, it's hippies and everything. So Austin was not like that in the show. But so I really had a connection there to that. The movie Friday Night Lights means a lot to me personally because of the Texas high school football connection. But, I mean, I love the speech. I love the perfect speech by Billy Bob Thornton and everything. Yeah, the football is really very realistic.
As good as it could get, yeah. It's good.
Very on point. So Friday Night Lights, for many reasons, is my number one. And it honestly isn't even that close for me. Before we got on here, we talked about how there really isn't, you know, more than 10 football movies that you can name that you're like, oh, those are good movies. And that's why we narrowed it down to five. And for me, I mean, this number one is it's head and shoulders above the rest. Friday Night Lights, my number one. So my list, Draft Day, The Room, Rudy, Remember the Titans, Friday Night Lights, Trill, round it out. Number one football movie.
If Friday Night Lights is your realistic Texas football movie, then my unrealistic Texas football movie that is also my favorite is Varsity Blues, which is going to be a controversial pick because it's really not that great of a movie, but there are so many iconic things happening in this movie. You had mentioned Paul Walker, James Vanderbeek as Johnny Moxon, the reluctant quarterback, him rolling out to pass in that trailer while the Foo Fighters Hero plays. I don't want your life. It's just a great movie. It's a nice, like, mixture of those late 90s, early 2000s teen raunchy movies with football. It worked really well. You couldn't do it again.
Football and whipped cream. Yep. Those raunchy 90s movies. Yeah. No one's mentioned that yet. I can't believe.
Allie Larder with the whipped cream bikini. My only wish from Varsity Blues, please, please give me a freaking video game from this movie. I want like an RPG game, like something like this mixed with Madden, but also like mixed with like Final Fantasy where I gain experience.
All right. So Trill, Varsity Blues, your number one. And didn't the Varsity Blues, There Goes My Hero, didn't that inspire Not Another Teen Movie too?
Oh, I'm sure. I don't remember.
I believe there's a scene in Not Another Teen Movie, which, by the way, do you know who the guy in Not Another Teen Movie is, right? It's Chris Evans, Captain America himself.
Chris Evans.
Oh, really?
Chris
Evans.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about like a just different career all the way down the road from going to the quarterback in Not Another Teen Movie that gets his player chopped in half with a bad pass. And then now he's Captain America. So Trill Ballins, your list, Rudy, Little Giants, Friday Night Lights, Remember the Titans and Varsity Blues. But guys, our opinions don't matter. It's all about the listeners. Here we go. So number three was The Replacements. It had 4,935 points, 195 first place votes. Number two had 15,640 points and 1,020 votes. Number two and number one blew the rest of the field out of the water. It's insane. 23.9% of all votes for first place went to number two, Friday Night Lights. Number one had almost 25% of all points. 39.4% of the people put number one as their number one football movie. That's more than any other movie outside of Friday Night Lights combined. Mm. Remember the Titans, number one. Not even close. Insanity. There was 1,680 first place votes for Remember the Titans, 1,000 for Friday Night Lights. The next most was 195 The Replacements. So clearly, our listeners love Friday Night Lights and Remember the Titans. Their list, number five, The Waterboy, Rudy, The Replacements, Friday Night Lights, Remember the Titans. Top 10, number 10 was Jerry Maguire, then The Blind Side, number 8, Little Giants, number 7, Any Given Sunday, and number 6, Varsity Blues. There's some others on there. Like I said, Longest Yard was up there. The Room was up there. Brian's Song. We Are Marshall.
The Room was up there.
Draft Day Radio was number 20.
Radio.
So there was a lot in the top 20, but number one and two, Remember the Titans and Friday Night Lights, combined made up more than 50%, almost 60% of the total first place votes, just alone. one movie. I'll let you guys guess. There's one recent 2000s and later movie that only got 1 point. It got 1 5th place vote. It's a recent movie, not considered good. There's a mega star in that movie. Do you know what that movie is? It got 1 5th place vote. It got 1 point. 2008, there's a mega, mega movie star in it. And then another star who's a mega star now, but was a...
The game plan. The game plan.
No, not the game plan. No, not Gridiron
Gang.
With
the Rock? Was it the one with the Rock?
No.
The game plan?
No, that was the Gridiron Gang.
This megastar has been a megastar much longer than The Rock, like for decades.
Leatherheads. Boom.
Yep.
It's Leatherheads. Oh, damn.
Yeah. Still got it. Kids still got it. Yes. I didn't really think of ranking Leatherheads, but I remember watching that and probably falling asleep in the middle of it. As charming as George Clooney may be, he didn't pass for me as a football player, even if it was trying to kick up a lot of that old brother, where art thou, energy, and old timiness. Yeah, didn't work.
George Clooney, John Krasinski, Renee Zellweger. Maybe next year, Leatherheads. I don't know. Maybe it'll be more rewatchable.
Off the record, you don't have to name names. Has anyone gotten mad out of their fictional points?
Like, on the record, allocation? I'll name names. Yeah. Okay. I used to end a show and go back, and by the time I walked off set, there was already a red blinking light. With some wondering how the scoring worked that day. I got a call from Jay Mariotti after a few shows in the early days around the horn. And now Bomani Jones, I made it 10 months, the longest drought anybody's had in recent around the horn history. And Bomani's been on other shows, and he moved in this time. Bomani Jones just went 10 months without a win, and he broke the drought this week. So that was March 28th to January 29th. That was the time he's gone without winning, and he let me know that for sure. Yeah. Bomani made sure that he knows. So
yeah. Hey, Tony, thanks for coming on and talking more than just football. I knew we'd get that, and that's why.
I'm sorry. I gave it to you. I had to loan you the mute button before we do it, but I really appreciate you guys having me on. I love the little intersection of sports and movies here. You invited me on. I appreciate it. Best luck with the podcast. I've enjoyed. What is this? This is maybe 20 or 30 episodes in, and I wish you guys the best of luck going forward.
We appreciate that. Thanks, man. Encyclopedia for pop culture. I learned that when we worked together. You're going to have to come on again at some point. You may have to be the sports movie guy. I think you were going to be a shoe-in.
I'll be your sports movie guy. I'm here for it. Okay. All right. Good stuff, guys. I guess Reali out.
Welcome to beautiful Hollywood, Florida, for the first annual Oscar nomination ceremony.
Thank you for joining the 2018 first annual Oscars nomination special. There are over 100 nominees in 37 different categories. Voting is now live, and you can find the link to the voting ballot on Twitter, @LightsCameraPod, and on our Reddit page, @LightsCameraPodcast. The winners of every category will be determined by the fans and only the fans. Before reading the nominees for different categories, you can find these following categories and their nominees on the voting ballot. Best Actress in a Leading Role, Best Actor in a Leading Role, Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Best Director, Best Animated Picture, Best Cinematography, Best Original or Super Old Revived Song, Best Soundtrack or Original Score, Best Screenplay, Best Movie Trailer, Worst Movie Trailer, and then Best Picture in separate categories of Action, Drama, Comedy, Horror or Thriller, and Comic, Fantasy, Sci-Fi, or Space. Now to some of the nominees for the exclusive Lights, Camera, Podcast categories. First up, in the category of Outstanding Cinematic Achievement in Cucking, the nominees are Get Out, Rose with Chris, The Greatest Showman, P.T. Barnum with All of Humanity, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Ego with Star-Lord and his mother, Logan Lucky, Katie Holmes' character leaves Channing Tatum's for Roy from The Office, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Kylo Ren with Supreme Leader Snoke, and Transformers The Last Knight, Decepticon Nitro Zeus taunts a guard about sleeping with his wife. In the category of Best Product Placement, the nominees are The Emoji Movie, Candy Crush, Fate of the Furious, Under Armour, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Dairy Queen, Power Rangers, Krispy Kreme, Transformers The Last Knight, All Car Companies. In the category of Best Streaming Service or Premium Movie, the nominees are Bright, Netflix, Gerald's Game, Netflix, The Meyerowitz Stories, Netflix, Mudbound, Netflix, Okja, Netflix, and The Wizard of Lies, HBO. In the category of Best Movie Involving a Wall, the nominees are All the Money in the World, Daddy's Home 2, The Great Wall, Transformers The Last Knight, and The Wall. In the category of Best Villain, the nominees are Adrian Toomes or The Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming, The Bye-Bye Man in The Bye-Bye Man, Ego in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Hela in Thor Ragnarok, Kylo Ren in Star Wars The Last Jedi, Love, Blade Runner 2049, Pennywise in It, The Sickness Emily Contracted in The Big Sick, and Sully Sullenberger in Daddy's Home 2. In the category of Best Character, the nominees are Baby Groot, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Christine Ladybird McPherson in Ladybird, Diana or Wonder Woman in Wonder Woman, John Wick in John Wick Chapter 2, Laura or X-23 in Logan, Merlin played by Stanley Tucci in Transformers The Last Knight, Molly Bloom in Molly's Game, Rod in Get Out, Valkyrie in Thor Ragnarok. In the category of Worst Character, the nominees are Anastasia and Christian Grey in 50 Shades Darker, Cogman in Transformers The Last Knight, the High Five Emoji in The Emoji Movie, John Goodman-Tron in Transformers The Last Knight, the Meh Emoji in The Emoji Movie, Optimus Prime in Transformers The Last Knight, the Poop Emoji in The Emoji Movie, Steppenwolf in Justice League, the Bye-Bye Man in The Bye-Bye Man, and Uncle Kurt, played by Mel Gibson in Daddy's Home 2. In the category of Best Twist or Revelation, the nominees are Coco, Get Out, Happy Death Day, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Split. In the category of Worst Twist or Revelation, spoiler alert, the nominees are Flatliners, Ellen Page's character dies, Geostorm, Ed Harris is the villain, Kingsman, The Golden Circle, Harry is still alive, The Mummy, Jake Johnson's character is alive, Tom Cruise is the mummy, and Transformers The Last Knight, A Watch Killed Hitler. In the category of Best Scene, non-fighting, the nominees are A Ghost Story, Pie-Eating Scene, Baby Driver, Opening Chase Scene, The Big Sick, Kumail's Lunch with Emily's Parents, Call Me By Your Name, Elio's Dad's Monologue, Coco, Remember Me Ending with Grandma Coco, Dunkirk, Soldiers Under Fire Huddled Together on the Dock with Their Helmets On, Get Out, The Sunken Place, Lady Bird, Airport Send-Off, Spider-Man Homecoming, Liz's Dad is the Vulture and Figures Out Peter is Spider-Man, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Luke and Kylo Ren's Final Encounter, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Dixon's Rampage and Window Toss, and Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman Runs Across No Man's Land. In the category of Best Scene, Fighting, the nominees are Atomic Blonde, Stairwell Fight, Baby Driver, Tequila Shootout, Blade Runner 2049, K vs. Rick Deckard in Las Vegas, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Chain Battle between Star-Lord and Ego, John Wick Chapter 2, Catacombs Escape by John Wick, Logan, Opening Limo Fight, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Supreme Leader Snoke's Throne Room with Kylo and Rey, Thor Ragnarok, Thor, Hulk, Loki, and Valkyrie vs. Hela, and Wind River Trailer Shootout. In the category of Funniest Scene or Moment, the nominees are Baby Driver, Mike Myers' Mask Mix-Up, The Big Sick, Kumail's lunch with Emily's parents and his 9/11 joke, The Disaster Artist, filming the Oh Hi Mark scene, Get Out, finale with Chris and Rod after the escape, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all, with Yondu, Logan Lucky, Game of Thrones prison argument, The Meyerowitz Stories, Lunch and Salmon Chat with Matt and Harold, and Thor Ragnarok, Matt Damon as Loki. In the category of Best Bobby Moynihan or Cannavale in any role, the nominees are Bobby Cannavale, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, Bobby Cannavale, Ferdinand, Bobby Cannavale, The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature, Bobby Moynihan, The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature, Bobby Moynihan, The Book of Henry, Bobby Moynihan, Killing Gunther. In the category of Best Use of Take Me Home, Country Road, the nominees are Alien Covenant, Kingsman, The Golden Circle, and Logan Lucky. In the category of That Show Business, Moment of the Year, the nominees are DC forced to CGI out Henry Cavill's mustache for Justice League, Disney buys all of Fox's movie properties, Tommy Wiseau demands a cameo in The Disaster Artist, Christopher Plummer cast in All the Money in the World weeks before premiere, Oscar snafu involving Moonlight and La La Land, Dark Universe canceled after The Mummy flops. In the category of Outstanding Baby, the nominees are Baby, Baby Driver, Boss Baby, The Boss Baby, Dom's Baby, Fate of the Furious, Mother's Baby, Mother. In the category of Looking Like a Snack, Role of the Year, the nominees are Chris Hemsworth, Thor, Ragnarok, Idris Elba, Molly's Game, Jason Momoa, Justice League, John Hamm, Baby Driver, Ryan Gosling, Blade Runner 2049, Chris Pine, Wonder Woman, and Zac Efron, Baywatch. In the category of Outstanding Achievement by an Actress, Actor, or Director in a role they didn't have but one you'd expect them to have, the nominees are Brendan Fraser, The Mummy, The Coen Brothers, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Josh Gad, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, Kevin Hart, Baywatch, Lin-Manuel Miranda, The Greatest Showman, and Melissa McCarthy, any movie from 2017 as she was not in any. In the category of Best Worst Picture, the nominees are The Bye Bye Man, Daddy's Home 2, The Dark Tower, The Emoji Movie, 50 Shades Darker, Flatliners, Geostorm, The Snowman, Transformers The Last Night, Wish Upon. In the category of Best Picture, the 10 nominees are The Big Sick, Blade Runner 2049, Call Me By Your Name, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Logan, The Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Wind River. Also, in the Honorary Awards category, this year, the first recipient of the Ryan Gosling Lifetime Snack Award will be Ryan Gosling. Thank you, and once again, you can vote for all 37 categories online right now. The voting ballot is live on the Lights Camera Pod Twitter, at Lights Camera Pod, as well as the Reddit page, r/LightsCameraPodcast. Thank you very much, and we will see you on March 4th for all the winners of the first annual Goskers.
Thank you for attending the first annual Goskers nomination ceremony. Please tip your waitstaff here at the Hollywood, Florida Holiday Inn. Please remember that parking is $7 and you can pay outside the lot. Please remember to take your ticket with you. Thank you.
Wow. Okay, guys. So that's our first ever break-in for news coverage. Pretty great. Goskers is going to take place on March 4th, 2018 in this podcast.
Wow.
Most likely.
Yeah. Big. We got Tony Reale on the show from ESPN, and we have our own award show now, which is wild.
We're very excited for you to vote for these. We wanted to include as many things that we felt all of you would want nominated. You know, look, it's not the most serious thing in the world, but hey, why not? Why not start somewhere? So we took your top five movies and your top five worst movies, and then we added a few others that we know everyone talks about a lot. We know like Wind River wasn't in your top five, but a lot of you talk about Wind River a lot, so we put it in there. So you all decide. It'll most likely be a podcast thing. That's still a ways away. It's over a month away, so I'm not sure where we'll be or where we'll be at with video and all of that. And If the time comes and we can do something live, we'll do something live. But for now, it'll be in the podcast, the Oscars preview podcast with Adnan Virk, also from ESPN, and Oscars expert, also part of the Academy's broadcast of the Oscars this year on digital. He'll join us to talk about the Oscars, and then we'll do our first annual Goscars special. And, of course, we're giving that Lifetime Snack Award to Ryan Gosling, which is pretty big.
Mm-mm.
You think he'll show up to accept the award?
Yeah, probably. Yes. I think he'll show up.
Look, folks, we're going to tweet out the nominations with graphics. All these nominations will get graphics. Please don't spam Bobby Moynihan or Bobby Cannavale, but you can definitely tag them when you say who you're going to vote for. We wouldn't hate if Bobby Moynihan and Bobby Cannavale were engaged in a discussion over this nomination. So that's all we'll say.
Bobby Moynihan!
Tony Reale is the man. Couldn't be more happy to have Tony on. He'll be back on to do sports and movies because you can tell he is very passionate about that topic.
I am so jealous of his energy level.
Me too.
I'm telling you, like, he gets on with us and he is like ready to go. Like, it's 7 a.m. in the morning and he's probably had a super long day. Super jealous. So thanks to him. He was great. Really nice guy.
Super high energy level, like almost unnatural for this time of, well, I don't know if we disclose what time we record the podcast, but it's sort of late.
Next week, we're going to be reviewing the movie Maze Runner, The Death Cure. Ken, Jack, and I will be going to see that this week. Trill will as well, but Ken, Jack, and I will do a new Messing Around with Coke freestyle. We'll release that. So we'll see Maze Runner, The Death Cure. We'll review that next week. No guests next week, but I think we're going to do listener questions. So think about some movie questions, and we're going to answer them on the podcast. Football week's been cool, though. God, football's what a all-American sport.
I love it. The big game is coming up on Sunday.
Part about the big game is that no matter who wins, True Ballins wins.
Absolutely. My dad was a huge Patriots fan, and I thought about going to Temple University, so I'm go Eagles too, you know?
The big game is this Sunday. Gonna see some big time trailers. The Han Solo trailer.
I think we'll get like an Indiana Jones teaser. We're gonna get like an Indiana Jones teaser. I think a little bit of that. Like coming 2023. Yeah, just out of nowhere.
Maybe Avatar. What if there's an Avatar trailer? Like James Cameron had a trailer for all of the next 5 Avatar sequels. He was just fucking with us this whole time.
like our Kingsman trailers, just in a row.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Like first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, end of the game.
Yeah. Woo! All right. Maze Runner, see it next week. We played Rock Me Amadeus last week, so Trill, do you have any suggestions that I have to ignore for the next few weeks?
There's a song called Mope by the Bloodhound Gang that samples Rock Me Amadeus.
Okay.
Yeah, so play that one.
2018, you're new me. I'm going to play everything Trill says. See Maze Runner, The Death Cure. We'll talk to you next week.